open the window?
Huh?
Should we open the window? Now?
It's freezing outside.
Just crack the window.
I'm okay. Right. Whatever. Well, I thought I would speak something from Srimad Bhagavatam, because it seems that's usually what happens when I come to Second Avenue, speak something from Srimad Bhagavatam. And I thought a nice place to speak from is just to bring a little bit of Mayapur Dham, the DBC meeting that a number of us just took part in, and the morning classes that are being held in Sri Dham Mayapur now are from Third Canto, Chapter 1. So bring a little of Mayapur and Srimad Bhagavatam together to 26 Second Avenue. That's what I was thinking. And it's a nice section. The first chapter of 3rd Canto is bringing in, it's laying the foundation for Vidura meeting Maitreya, because through the whole beginning parts of the 3rd Canto, Krishna is winding up his pastimes, and Krishna instructs Uddhava in Dwaraka, I'm going to leave, my pastimes are completed, and I want you to be safe, so I want you to take shelter of the devotees of Naranarayan Rishi. Go now, leave Dwaraka and go take shelter of them in Bhadrikashram. So Uddhava can't bear the thought of Krishna's leaving the planet and leaving Krishna's association, but Krishna has instructed him, and so he starts to leave, but he can't do it. He comes back to Dwarka. By that time Krishna's gone, and his separation from Krishna is just so intense, and he searches high and low, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And finally he finds Krishna. A beautiful scene underneath a large banyan tree in the forests near the banks of the river Jamuna, with Krishna's long arms stretched out and his long white and yellow dhoti stretched, and his reclining figure on the lap of a very large banyan tree, and Uddhava in ecstasy places himself at Krishna's feet and sobbing expresses, I couldn't follow your instruction, I couldn't leave your association, you're so kind to allow me to again see you. And he presents many, many questions. The Uddhava Gita, which is discussed later in the Bhagavatam, takes place, and Maitreya is fortunate enough to be in the vicinity where he also hears the whole description. And then later Vidura meets up with Maitreya. First he meets Vidura, first he meets Uddhava, then Maitreya. So chapter 1 is laying a foundation for that. It connects with a narration that's also found in Mahabharata. Do we have new people here that don't know who these personalities are and it's just confusing? Yeah? Okay. Uddhava, outside, The most intimate associates of Krishna were in Vrindavan. Outside of Vrindavan, the most confidential associate of Krishna was Uddhava, like a minister. And even Krishna would consult Uddhava, what do you think I should do? And Uddhava would, my dear Lord, you're all omniscient, but you're asking, so this is just a service, I'll volunteer something. Uddhava was such an intimate associate of Krishna. And Uddhava, hearing from Krishna, is like Arjuna hearing from Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is asking questions, Krishna is answering. Similar interplay or dynamic. Uddhava is asking questions, Krishna is answering. A third person, Maitreya, is hearing that. The great sage, Maitreya Rishi. Maitreya hears and becomes fully realized. Another person then meets Maitreya, who heard from Krishna. So this is the process of disciplic succession. Vidura, in the Mahabharata, Vidura is one of three brothers. By birth, Vidura is born of a Shudra, the maidservant of the queen, gave birth to a son, and his name was Vidura. So Vidura was respected and treated like a member of the royal family, but not ever to be in the position of a king. But he had the wisdom above the king, although his birth was by social status a lower status. His spiritual capacity was superlative, and he had very fine discretion about the main theme of Mahabharata, that is, what is right conduct and what is wrong. What is to be done, what is not to be done. What is virtue, what is vice. And Vidura was always on the side of virtue. And the first chapter opens with Vidura, who is the younger brother of his blind elder brother, advising his blind elder brother, get it together. Two things. The message, I'll read some of the verses, but just kind of glimpse before we read the verses. Two things. If you act on the platform of the body, that's a symptom of ignorance, and activities that are born of ignorance are destined to bring suffering. The real identity is the soul. Act on the platform of the soul, and your activities will be elevated, and they'll bring illumination and happiness. My dear brother, your consciousness is on the platform of the body, and you will suffer, the whole kingdom will suffer, everyone in relation to you will suffer. Everything is destined for frustration and failure. Don't act on the platform of the body. Act on the platform of the soul. And the other message is, there are codes of conduct. There's theistic conduct. Don't violate theistic conduct based on your calculating mind. Because if you don't act on theistic conduct, you'll suffer. And if you act on the codes of theistic conduct, even it may look like it's not going to be a good outcome, it'll be a good outcome. Because by acting by theistic conduct, it brings to elevation, and elevation brings to illumination and real happiness. So I'm just reflecting back on wonderful classes that we heard. Bhakti Trumaraj gave a very powerful class where he outlined 6 or 7 different times in which the same message was delivered to Dhritarashtra. And Dhritarashtra, because of his attachment, chose to not get it. Dhritarashtra was told again and again and again, from the very birth of his first son, Duryodhan. When Duryodhan was born, the wife of Dhritarashtra was Gandhari. We'll go back. go back and direct to the verse. There's one of the messages I wanted to speak about. Two main messages. One of the messages is the consequence of bad association. So the theme of the message is wherever there's bad behavior, Prabhupada taught, you can go back and back and back, and somewhere you'll find bad association. Because tendencies don't come out without bad association. So, different personalities in Mahabharata did some very bad things. But you can trace out before those bad things was bad association. And in one verse on the Bhagavatam, Shakuni is pointed out as the bad association that corrupted Duryodhan, then in turn corrupted Dhritarashtra, and then in turn, you know, bad things started to happen. It was Shakuni. I mean, he doesn't get star billing in Mahabharata so much. But here in the Bhagavatam, he's pointed to by Shukadeva Goswami as it's like the spark that ignites dry leaves. And once the dry leaves are inflamed, the dry leaves can then burn a city. They can burn a house, they can burn a block, they can burn the whole city. Just some sparks.
Like a bad apple.
Huh?
Like a bad apple.
A bad apple in the barrel. Spoils the whole barrel. Bad association is something that devotees, those that are striving to move on a spiritual path, need to carefully avoid. In one of the verses of this first chapter, Shukadeva Goswami says, or Vidura says to Dhritarashtra, because you're maintaining your son Duryodhan, who is inimical to Krishna, all your good qualities have been taken away. So Duryodhan was corrupted based upon Shakuni's association. It's not that Dhritarashtra was a nice guy, but Dhritarashtra had some traits that were bad, but they were brought out by Shakuni's association. So devotees, please be careful about bad association. If you happen to run into Shakuni, beware. Or one who has had Shakuni's association, Dhritarashtra, beware. And better to seek out the association of Vidura or persons like Vidura, whatever their birth may be, if they have standing in theistic conduct and acting on the platform of the soul. Whatever their other shortcomings may be. That's one of the themes. Read some of the verses here. Saint Vidura. So Vidura is one of the three brothers. He was the born of a Shudra mother in the royal palace. So he wasn't of a kingly stature. He was a Shudra, means like a menial stature, social stature, but very virtuous, brilliant, always spoke the truth, always understood what is the right thing to do and spoke it. And he was always giving advice to his elder brother, who was the king, but was blind from birth, and because of his attachments, he was also spiritually blind. And he told his brother, strong language. Oh, maybe I'll do the story part first, how it gets to this particular position. Bring in Shakuni. Shakuni is mentioned in the Mahabharata at a time when the two brothers, those who, of the three brothers, Vidura was the younger brother and born of a Shudra mother. Pandu was his elder and Dhritarashtra was his elder. So, because their father was not present, Vyasadeva had begotten the two sons, the three brothers, but Vichitravirya was absent, and so to continue the throne, continue the line of kings, the Vyasadeva fathered these three sons, and Bhishma Dev, who had taken a vow, I will never become king, I will never take a queen, I will never have children. Also, although he was this brahmachari, he was in the royal family, and he took the responsibility for marrying Dhritarashtra and Pandu. Mahabharata describes there were three candidates that looked like very, very favorable, very qualified queens. One of them was Gandhari, the other was Kunti, and the other was Madri. This part of it was their qualification, and part of it was the consideration of alliances with powerful dynasties. So it was known that Gandhari had received a benediction when she was a young girl from Lord Shiva, that she would bear 100 sons. And it was known, at least by Bhishma Dev, that Vyas, after conceiving Dhritarashtra, pronounced to Satyavati, the child that will be born will have 100 sons. But because his mother, when the time of conception was taking place, had her eyes closed, he'll be born blind. So Dhritarashtra was known that he would have 100 sons, and Gandhari was known she would have 100 sons. So he thought it was a nice idea to propose that these two become married. Logic there. So Bhishma Dev, Grandfather Bhishma, consulted Vidura. That's how much valued Vidura's opinion was. And Vidura respected Bhishma Dev like Grandfather Bhishma, like the elevated grandsire of the Kurus, and said, "Your ideas are perfectly right because of your wisdom and your spiritual insight. Everything that you have said is very wonderful." So Bhishma Dev went forward and sent a messenger to the king of Kandahar. Gandahar. Same place, Prabhupada explains. Today's Kandahar in Afghanistan was the capital of the king of Gandahar, and his daughter was Gandhari. So the envoy went to the king. Suvala was his name, but his kingdom was Gandahar, and made the proposal that your daughter, Gandhari, marry Dhritarashtra. And King Suvala wasn't so sure. He had mixed feelings. "How can my daughter, she's such a qualified princess, marry someone that's blind? How will that be? How will that work? She's so qualified." But on the other hand, the Kuru dynasty is generation after generation after generation known as virtuous, victorious, very powerful. It'll be a very dynamic alliance between our two dynasties. So he considered and accepted the marriage. The Mahabharata describes after the marriage, Gandhari was taken to Hastinapur by her brother, whose name was Shakuni. Very much like we find Kamsa took Devaki to her new residence. When Devaki and Vasudeva were married, Kamsa, the brother, or half-brother, partial-brother, took Devaki in a chariot to her new residence, from her father's home to her husband's home. So Shukuni did that all the way from Afghanistan to Hastinapur. And once Gandhari, having blindfolded herself, because as soon as she heard that her husband was blind, she didn't want to place herself in any way in a superior position above her husband, so she immediately blindfolded her eyes and very faithfully and chastely served her husband, Dhritarashtra. So, after staying some time in Hastinapur, Shakuni went home, back to Afghanistan. Some things don't change too much over a period of time. So, Pandu was then married to the other two candidates. Madri was the princess of the king of Madras. And Kunti became the other wife. After some time, just fast forward, the pregnancy of Gandhari took place first. So Dhritarashtra was very happy. He was thinking, when this child is born, if it is a male child, he will inherit the throne. Pandu, via Kunti, skipping some important details, Kunti became pregnant second but gave birth first. The pregnancy of Gandhari remained within her womb extra long, more than would be normal period of gestation for a mother. And so when Gandhari heard that Kunti had given birth first, which meant that her son would become the king, with her fist, she punched her belly. And the pregnancy was aborted, and a lump of flesh instead of a child appeared. A lump of flesh, and she was shocked. A lump of flesh. Not even a child. So the sages gave her advice, this is all right. You take this lump of flesh, divide the lump of flesh into 100 parts, place each part in a pot, let them stay in the pot for nearly a year, and after a year, one by one, the children will be born. So that's what Gandhari did. And the first one that was born was Duryodhan. And from the time that Duryodhan was born, all evil omens took place. A little personal story. One time I was coming from Manhattan. Came over the Manhattan Bridge. Came into Brooklyn. And it's very much like what's described in Mahabharata when Dhritarashtra took place in Brooklyn. Middle of the day, nice sunny day. All of a sudden, the sky became completely black. This rumbling sound in the air, I swear to God, I was thinking, some demon is taking birth. According to Mahabharata, all inauspicious omens were very visible to everybody, and Dhritarashtra took birth. So Vidura went straight, Duryodhan took birth. Duryodhan took birth. So Vidura went to his elder brother and said, you saw those omens. We all saw those omens. Oh, you're blind. You heard about those omens. These were the omens. Do you know what that means? Get rid of this child. This child will be the destruction of the whole dynasty. Dhritarashtra couldn't do it. Bhakti Trumaraj was describing incident after incident after incident. Vidura, straight, and others also, straight to Dhritarashtra, get rid of Duryodhan. His character is bad. His presence in the royal family will destroy the whole family. Get rid of him. Dhritarashtra couldn't do it because Dhritarashtra was attached. So, lesson, if you have good association, if you are unreasonably attached, you can't receive good association. So we'll continue with the narration. The Pandavas grew up because Pandu enjoyed very much a rustic kind of life, although he was the incumbent king, and his son Yudhisthira, firstborn son, would become the next king. He liked being out in the wilderness instead of in the big royal palace. After some time, skipping detail, Pandu died. So then Kunti was left with 5 sons. Madri, the co-wife, entered into the funeral pyre of their combined husband, Pandu. Kunti, being husbandless with 5 young boys, came back to the royal palace. And the Mahabharata describes they were received very nicely initially because they're cousins. 2 brothers having 100 sons and 5 sons. Cousins. So they were enjoying one another's company until this diabolical character of Duryodhan couldn't stand the exalted character of the Pandavas. The truthfulness of Yudhisthira, the prowess of Arjuna, and the power of Bhima. His envy of their exalted qualities started becoming inflamed. Then, as the boys were becoming of age to learn military skill, Dronacharya enters the scene. skipping some wonderful detail of how that happened. Bhishma Dave gave Drona the responsibility of training the boys in military skill. And while Drona had that responsibility, he invited Balaram to also come to Hastinapur and teach fighting with clubs. So while Balaram was there teaching both Duryodhan and Bhima how to fight with clubs, he could understand there's this rivalry that's really intense. So when Balaram went back to Dwaraka, he informed Krishna, there's a problem over here in Hastinapur. These two cousins, families, there's an intense rivalry. Within Hastinapur, Krishna had a grand reputation. He was understood as the prince of the Yadu dynasty and very, very powerful personality. Of course, the Pandavas understood him to be the personality of Godhead. But the members of the royal family, they had great esteem for Krishna. So Krishna, being related to Kunti, had personal concern. And so he arranged for Akura, one of the ministers in Dwaraka, he arranged for Akura to go to Hastinapur and check out the situation. He gave him three instructions. Go there, assess the situation, see if there's something that you can do to improve the situation, and then come back and give me a full report. Akura. So we know who Akura is, right? Akura appears earlier when Akura is sent by Kamsa to take Krishna from Vrindavan to Mathura. Same Akura, only now based in Dwaraka, along with the Yadu dynasty, the same dynasty that Krishna arranged to go from Mathura to Dwaraka. Akura came as a representative, a minister of the Yadu dynasty, sent by Krishna. So he was received in a very grand, royal, proper way. Akura, by this time, very elderly, very wise, very much respected, treated just like Ugrasena had come. A kind of royal reception. As soon as the royal reception was finished, and he had some time to move around, he went straight to Kunti and let Kunti know what his purpose in coming was. And Kunti showed her quality. Kunti's main quality is she's just attached to Krishna. So she blurted out with profuse tears streaming from her eyes, does our dear relative Krishna even think about us? Does he have the intention to sometimes come here and give us his association? And just the intensification of her thoughts upon Krishna, she began crying uncontrollably. So Akura brought Vidura and together they tried to put Kunti back together again with encouraging words. We know that there's tension, Kunti, but please know that Vyasadeva already said that these boys will live a long life. We trust in Vyasadeva's words. Moreover, we know that these boys are direct appearances of the sons of the Devas. They're not ordinary children. So although they're very young, please know that they're protected. Please give up your distress and share with us so that we can help. What is the situation? Please describe. So, Kunti, being a great devotee of Krishna, and Kunti being born of a royal stock, she could very clearly understand the whole situation, and she began describing it to Krura. She described that just recently, after Drona had finished training up both the Kauravas and the Pandavas, he asked for his dakshin. And you know what he asked for his dakshin? He requested both sets of sons to go do battle with Drona, defeat him, and bring him before me tied up with ropes. That was his dakshin, guru dakshin. So the Kauravas were really fired up, and so they said, we'll take care of it ourselves. The Pandavas said, okay, you take care of it. And Drupada defeated the whole army of the Kauravas. The Pandavas, after seeing the Kauravas were defeated, the Pandavas, just five soldiers, defeated the whole army of Drupada. Personally, Arjun defeated Drupada, tied him and brought him like an animal, tied up before Drona. His Guru Dakshin was now complete. So, Kunti said, while this showed the prowess of my sons, it has simply intensified the animosity from the Kauravas towards my sons. The situation is very intense. I don't know what is going to happen. Akura, please give us your protection. So, the Mahabharata describes, Akura stayed for 3 months in Hastinapur, getting all the details of what's going on, as a good minister would do. And then he was ready to go back and report to Krishna what had happened, what the situation was. But Krishna had also asked him to see if he could do something to improve the situation. So he requested an audience with the king, with Dhritarashtra. And the discussion between Akura and Dhritarashtra was really heavy. Akura said some of the same things that Vidura was regularly saying to Dhritarashtra. Same two basic things. Before I leave, I must say that you have succumbed to a degree of ignorance that is very dangerous. You're thinking and acting on the platform of the body. You are thinking, these are my sons and those are Pandu's sons. But consider, Dhritarashtra, before they were your sons, whose sons were they? And after they are gone, whose sons will they be? So you're thinking in terms of my sons and his sons. This is ignorance. It's illusion. And one who acts in ignorance and illusion suffers. Give up this ignorance and instead act on the platform of what is right. What is the law according to the scriptures that we live by? The firstborn son, everyone knows, is to become the king, and Yudhisthira is the firstborn son. He is destined to inherit the throne. But you want your sons, and based on this attachment, you're ready to violate the principles of religion. You'll doubly suffer. Please consider. You should turn the kingdom over to Yudhisthira. Dhritarashtra's response was, Akura, You're such a brilliant Brahmin and scholar and wise person. Everything that you have said is like ambrosia. It's absolutely crystal clear and correct, but it doesn't enter my heart. I'm attached. And it must be by providence that I'm attached. And similarly, it must be by providence, whatever will happen is providentially arranged. What can I do? When Vyasadeva writes this in Mahabharata, he then comments that Dhritarashtra refused to take responsibility for his actions. It must be the will. It's just the way things are meant to be. And not taking responsibility for his own conduct. And we sometimes find that in the world today, where somebody, I hear it a lot, you know, when somebody does like this, I'm the kind of person who, and, you know, feeling completely justified because I'm the kind of person who does like this, when prompted this way, this stimulus, this response, because it's just the modes of nature that govern me. And there's nothing more than that. Or it's justified because this is my nature. And that's basically what Dhritarashtra was saying. He had good association. Again and again he had good association. Spiritually elevated association. Messages that were guiding him in the right direction. But because of his attachment on the platform of the body, he couldn't follow it. And he knew it was right, and he still couldn't follow it. He didn't even try to follow it. And so, Akura, hearing this response, understood what was going to, the events that would follow, and the outcome of those events that would follow. So he left and reported everything to Krishna, just as he had experienced it. So after Akura left, then the king, Dhritarashtra, began to think, you know, he's right. I am attached, but he's right. Maybe I should ask some of my other ministers. So part of Dhritarashtra's character, again and again it appears in the Mahabharata, he wouldn't act independently. He would seek the counsel of the Brahmins. So he asked Bhishma, he asked Kripacharya, he asked his other ministers, and they confirmed what Akura had said. You should make Yudhisthira the prince regent or the incumbent king. So he arranged a ceremony where Yudhisthira was proclaimed the king who would inherit the throne, or the prince who would become the next king. And when he did that, Dhritarashtra knew, my sons, I'm going to be really bothered, and I have to do something to pacify my sons. Meanwhile, they were very bothered. And then in comes Shakuni in the scene. Shakuni was sitting with Duryodhan, the eldest of the sons of Dhritarashtra, and his friend Karna. And Shakuni, knowing the situation, knowing the intense desire of Dhritarashtra, of Dhritarashtra to maintain his sons in that position, and knowing the intense desire of the sons to get that throne and remove the influence of the Pandavas, he hatched a plan. The plan was, the Pandavas are more powerful than us in military strength, so we have to get rid of them by unfair means. First, we have to remove them from Hastinapur, and then we have to kill them by unfair means. Karna, being very chivalrous, didn't like the idea at all. He said, "What, this act of cowardice? Why are you speaking like this? We're Kshatriyas. Stand on the battlefield and fight with them. We're very powerful. We have many allies. We're very powerful soldiers." Shikuni just shook his head and said, "You're very brave and heroic, but you're foolish. It's already been seen that their military prowess is far superior to ours. We have to use this other means." And Karna stood up, said, "No. The fact that they beat Drupada is because we had no idea how powerful Drupada was. When they saw that we were defeated, they were ready. I say, let us stand and fight as true Kshatriyas." Shikuni shook his head. Duryodhan shook his head. Karna walked out. Said, "You two can do what you like, but I have no interest in any act of cowardice and cheating like this. Do as you wish." So it was then just Shikuni and Duryodhan. And Shikuni laid out his plan. With the consent of Dhritarashtra, we can fulfill this plan. And your father is completely attached to you. He won't deny something that you want very strongly. You watch and see how it works. And it worked. Dhritarashtra was concerned about his sons, so he asked his brother-in-law, "Shikuni, what do you think I should do? My sons are going to be very disturbed now that Yudhisthira is to become the king." Shikuni says, "I have a very qualified Brahmin that I always draw good advice from. I can bring him here and he can meet with you." So the minister, the Brahmin, was brought in to see the king, and he told the king the same thing that Shikuni had said. "The only way to deal with this situation is the Pandavas have to be eliminated. Otherwise, you will be destroyed and your sons will be destroyed. This is my opinion." The king dismissed him and then considered, "How can I do this? This is unthinkable. Pandu, my younger brother, took care of me during our period of growing up. I was blind. I couldn't take care of myself. He completely sacrificed everything for me. And now in his absence, to kill his sons? I can't do that. He was tormented with the thought. Shikuni then orchestrated with Dhritarashtra in this disturbed state of mind, sent Duryodhan. You can imagine the scene. Blind king sitting on the throne, stewing over what to do. He can't see, but he can hear his son enter, huffing and seething and just intensely angry. What is it, my son? What's troubling you? I can't stand the Pandavas becoming the king. What do you think is going to happen, my good father? When the Pandavas, they are also wise, and when they become the king, knowing that we have previously held the throne, they'll see us as a source of danger. And what are they going to do? My dear father, they will eliminate us. We must eliminate them first, before Yudhisthira is made king. And again, Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra's character was, it showed at the very, very end, just as he left his body, when Vidura finally got through, he actually had high character, but his high character was covered by his attachment. He couldn't take good association because of attachment. And his attachment was to one who was inimical to Krishna. He was inimical to Krishna because he was inimical to the Pandavas, who were very dear to Krishna. So one who is... This is the bad association program. If you take up the association of one who has no morals, like Shakuni, or even worse, that of once the low character of Duryodhan became inflamed by Shakuni, what Vidura said, when Krishna came to try to bring truce, let's not have a battle. I'm coming as a messenger of Yudhisthira. You keep the kingdom. Just give the Pandavas 5 states to rule over. You take the whole rest of the world. No. Give them 5 cities to rule over. No. Give them 5 villages to rule over. No. And Krishna left. Without saying a further word, he left. Right in Duryodhan's presence, Vidura spoke to Dhritarashtra. Read his words, very strong. When Vidura was invited by his elder brother, Dhritarashtra, for consultation, he entered the house and gave instructions which were exactly to the point. His advice was well known, and instructions by Vidura are approved by expert ministers of state. Vidura said, "You must now return the legitimate share to Yudhisthira, who has no enemies and who has been forbearing through untold sufferings due to your offenses. He is waiting with his younger brothers, among whom is the revengeful Bhima, breathing heavily like a snake. Surely you are afraid of him." Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, has accepted the sons of Pritha as his kinsmen, and all the kings of the world are with Lord Sri Krishna. He is present in his home with all his family members, the kings and princes of the Yadu dynasty, who have conquered an unlimited number of rulers, and he is their lord. You are maintaining offense personified. Duryodhan standing right there, as your infallible son. But he is envious of Lord Krishna. And because you are thus maintaining a non-devotee of Krishna, you are devoid of all auspicious qualities. Relieve yourself of this ill fortune as soon as possible and do good to the whole family. Basically, get rid of him. While speaking thus, Vidura, whose personal character was esteemed by respectable persons, was insulted by Duryodhana, who was swollen with anger and whose lips were trembling. Duryodhana was in company with Karna, his younger brothers, and his maternal uncle Shakuni. And in the purport, Prabhupada explains that it was through the association of Shakuni. Thus, due to his bad association with Shakuni, his maternal uncle, as well as with his friend Karna, who has always enraged Duryodhana in his nefarious acts. So, it's not just that Dhritarashtra wanted a kingdom, because we have other examples of persons who have material desires, like Dhruva, who wanted a kingdom. Really intensely he wanted a kingdom, and he wanted a kingdom for get back at his stepmother reasons. Not for very elevated reasons. But Dhruva didn't have bad association. Dhruva had good association, his mother and Narada, and because of that good association and his desire to achieve the lotus feet of Vishnu, all of the bad qualities of Dhruva were dissipated by that attachment to the personality of Godhead. The opposite happened with Dhritarashtra. Because he maintained one who was envious of Krishna, all of his good qualities were taken away. And thus he was put in a terrible situation where even good advice he knew it was right, he couldn't do it. So the two lessons from all of this, as devotees trying to move on a path toward Krishna, we have to be very careful what association we keep and from whom we seek advice also. Dhritarashtra, when he sought advice from Shakuni's minister, when you ask advice from a fool, you'll get foolish advice. And you ask advice from someone who is acting on the platform of the soul and guided by theistic conduct, you'll get elevating advice. But one has to be, then the other is, one has to be ready to take that good advice. And when there are strong attachments, it makes it very difficult to take good advice. When there are strong attachments, when Vidura spoke the truth, it just made Duryodhana angry. And Prabhupada explains that. Like feeding milk to a serpent. A poisonous serpent becomes more poisonous by giving him milk, or his poisonous capacity becomes more intense. Vidura's concern was not his own well-being. Vidura's concern consistently throughout all of this was the well-being of Dhritarashtra, because he was the king, and the actions and decisions of the king very much affect everybody, certainly the royal family, and it affects all the citizens. So the advice that we seek should be from a person who is acting on the platform of the soul and acts according to theistic conduct. Then we're likely to get good advice. And when that good advice comes, act upon it. And acting upon it becomes possible when there's detachment or attachment to Krishna. When Vidura was insulted, several things just end this in this point. Vidura, after being insulted by, here's what Duryodhan said. Who asked him to come here? The son of a kept mistress. He is as crooked, he is so crooked that he spies in the interest of the enemy against those on whose support he has grown up. Toss him out of the palace immediately and leave him with only his breath. Vidura didn't say a word. Vidura understood the situation. That is, there's not any service for me here. The service is to speak the truth. The truth is just aggravating the heck out of these people. There's no service for me. So he stood up, took his bow and arrow, placed it by the door, and just kept walking. He didn't come back. It's described, he also understood that he was in this situation where, had the battle taken place and he was still in the kingdom, he would have been obliged to take the side, at least theistically, to take the side, as Bhishma Dev did, take the side of the Kauravas. But how can he take the side of these corrupt people? So Krishna relieved him of that very, very difficult decision. And moreover, it gave him the opportunity simply to go on pilgrimage and purify himself, the real mission, higher mission of life. And as a result, in the course of all of his travels to the sacred places, he eventually met Maitreya, back to the very beginning of the discussion. And hearing from Maitreya, who had just heard from Krishna, he achieved spiritual perfection. He became situated in the topmost platform. Before Vidura left, he was wise. When he came back, he was a pure devotee. And he was a pure devotee because of that association with Maitreya, and also the purification of his pilgrimage, but also this qualification of detachment. He wasn't attached to the comfortable situation of palace life. It was unbearable for him because virtue was not prevailing. And his opportunity to serve the principles of truth were taken or blocked by Duryodhan. So, some other service, please. It's a great drama, Mahabharata's, a great drama filled with many personal and practical lessons, and it's right in the beginning of this third canto of the Bhagavatam. I find it very interesting how the parts of the Bhagavatam where the Mahabharata stories weave in and then they fade out, and then you're left with, there's Vidura hearing the Uddhava Gita, Maitreya hearing the Uddhava Gita, and then Vidura hearing from Maitreya. It takes one into the attachment to Krishna platform. From the platform of what is the right code of conduct to live your life by, leading into attachment to Krishna principle. And that's the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us this higher principle, the transcendental principle, right from the very beginning. Even if one has some material attachment, like Dhritarashtra had strong material attachment, if one gets good association and becomes somehow attached to Krishna, then all bad qualities can be removed by that attachment to Krishna principle. That's what the Bhagavatam is teaching. Not that it's okay to have attachments. We want to let go of attachments. But even if there are strong material attachments, we just somehow can't seem to let go of. If we can make the attachment to Krishna very strong through good association and strong spiritual practices, those impurities also can be washed away on the strength of devotional service. Hare Krishna. Any discussion? Yes, Harikirtan.
Maharaj, earlier in your presentation, you described how Dhritarashtra was told at the time of Duryodhana's birth that all these bad omens indicate that you've got a bad seed here and you should get rid of them.
Yes.
And as material attachments go, attachment to one's newborn son might be considered a reasonable rather than an unreasonable attachment.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if, based on the high degree of difficulty with regard to this particular kind of attachment, if we should cut Dhritarashtra some slack, at least at that stage.
Sure.
Of the...
Sure. It's certainly, you know, very human of him. Then the question... The whole, you know, one of the things that I like about Mahabharata is it takes a principle and really, you know, sticks it to you, puts it in an extreme situation. And, you know, the extreme situation doesn't change the principle. So, for someone who's a king, what's the duty of the king? Is the duty of the king his son or his citizens? Like Ram. What's the duty? The duty of Ram is the citizens. He puts the citizens' interest before personal interest. So that's the principle that was being... So it's not just, you know, he's, you know, there's some problem with this child here. He was... The omens were such that this is a terrible personality, a totally demoniac personality. So yeah, cut him some slack. There's some attachment because it's his firstborn son. And then, sure enough, as time went by, all the omens bore their fruit. So, you know, what exact... I don't recall exactly what was recommended. You know, what do you do with a child in that circumstance? You know, dispose of him or not bring him into the royal family? My understanding is don't keep him in this exalted position as a member of the royal family, as opposed to, let's say, you know, infanticide or something like that. Yeah. Satyaraj?
I just want to highlight that the Mahabharata called Duryodhana the Kali Purusha, his personality of Kali. It's not just that he was a bad kid. You know, the personification of Kali Yuga.
In Bhakti Chumash's lecture, he emphasized that at least 10 times. In fact, that's a theme he likes to speak about is Kali is, you know, so many difficulties that the world has to deal with, or we have to deal with collectively or individually. It's the influence of Kali. And that was the child that was born. Yes.
I just have another doubt. I mean, it seems like, I mean, you really, okay, there were some bad omens that happened to take place at that time. And maybe there was another child being born somewhere else. And how did that really, it seems kind of,
how do they know that the omens were connected to that child?
Yeah, I mean, even if, I don't know, it just seems like, you know, I mean, if some, it seems like a harsh judgment based on some ill omen. Even, you know, it seems like, okay, you might want to...
Let's check it out. Watch the guy closely.
Yeah, I mean, even just sending him away from the...
That's my understanding of what the instruction was.
Can you explain why it might be that people would take those omens so seriously at that time?
Because they were so extreme. I mean, you know, like we find in the first canto of the Bhagavatam where after the departure of Lord Krishna, there's certain omens. Or Kamsa, you know, the evening before he was killed by Krishna, in his dreams, you know, they were omens. So they weren't just maybe it's this and maybe it's that. It was very clear what it was. But you know, given the margin of uncertainty, that the message was, as far as I understand, don't bring him up as a member of the royal family. Let him live, but not in this position as a leader of the whole of the citizenry. It's something like Maharaj Parikshit, when the personality of Kali surrendered to him, the question is raised. Then there wasn't any question, you know, what he was doing. It wasn't, who is this person and what's he up to? But when the personality of Kali surrendered to Maharaj Parikshit, he spared him. But a person of Maharaj Parikshit's caliber, he knew exactly what it meant that the personality of Kali would live. I mean, a lot of people would have to undergo a lot of suffering, and he's the king, he could stop it right there. But he didn't. So why didn't he? Prabhupada discusses that. It's not what your question is, but it's from the other angle. He didn't, because he understood this is the age of Kali, and it's not, you know, what can he do to interfere with the plan of the Lord? But it's the duty of a king to give protection to citizens. And if the disruptive person is one's own son, then that disruptive person needs to be checked. Yes? Go ahead.
Where is the boundary between the karma and the personal freedom of making decisions of like solo fellow?
Which person are you speaking about?
Huh? Who was he actually able to change the situation?
Oh, he had the option to act according to religious principle.
But did he really?
But he what?
Did he really have that?
Yeah, he really had it. Every soul has freedom, has free will. Every soul has free will. So supposing, according to one's karma, something's moving this direction, one can move that direction. Supposing someone is moving that direction, they can move this direction. There may be forces moving you this way or that way, but free will also is there. And especially if one takes shelter of Krishna, then the capacity of that free will becomes empowered more. If someone is, whatever, in a fortunate position, they can lose that. So someone's in an unfortunate position, they can overcome that. It's not just someone's karma.
It is sometimes difficult to understand, you know, where this boundary lies, where what it can actually try to counteract and what you have to keep up with.
Well, it all gets really simple when you surrender to the Supreme Pure. When you surrender to the, when you make that connection with the Supreme Pure, then it's easy. It's not any more difficult. If you don't go the other direction, if you don't surrender to the Supreme Pure, then it's this struggle that I don't know how it's going to turn out. Devi esha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. It's a difficult struggle. But mam eva ye prapadyante. Prapadyante means surrender. Those who surrender unto me, it's very easy. Mayam etam tarantite. They can easily cross on the other side of the struggle and come into the internal potency of Krishna. That is, as Krishna desires, things happen. Then there's this other energy down here that's the struggle. But there's another energy. And that's, you know, the Krishna's will, and one can choose to act in harmony with Krishna's will.
But for example, bringing about the story about the disciple of Prabhupada who lost the money for the temple, and like I said, apparently God doesn't want, Krishna doesn't want us to build the temple because the money is gone. And Prabhupada said, well, I thought
Don't blame your nonsense on Krishna.
He lost the money, so there was some room, even though he kind of surrendered.
Yeah, but there was also inattentiveness, and therefore something happened that was unfortunate. And when attentiveness to Krishna is there, Krishna protects. Inattentiveness, the laws of material nature prevail. The spiritual energy and the material energy. And we can be inattentive while engaged in devotional service, and the influence of, you know, past bad deeds may come into play. So be attentive. That's the message.
Okay.